magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number, what did we just decide? It was 374.
Sounds right to me.
Recording on Friday, October 26, 2018. This will be the last podcast for Halloween. So hope everyone has a good Halloween. Do you guys get a lot of trick-or-treaters, Jared, where you guys are?
No, none at all.
None? You live like right in the thick of things, though, in like a big neighborhood.
Yeah, but I live on a really busy street, and I think that's part of it. And so the first year we lived here, we had two. And then the next, last year, I just shut off the lights because I was like, I don't even want to deal with it.
See, for us in the Chicago area, so we live really close to, we live right in between a grade school and an elementary school. But it's like super weather dependent for us here. Because it's like either your Halloween is... It seems like there's three outcomes in the Chicago area. Like either it's like super nice, and that happens like once every 5 years, or it's super cold and you are like super bummed because you have to like wear your coat over your costume and stuff.
Yeah.
Or it's rainy or snowy, potentially also super cold. So
yeah,
it really, like, we buy candy from Costco because it's really hard to tell what you're like, what it's going to be like. Like last year it was super cold and rainy, like freezing rain. So we got like no one. Yeah. But the year before that was like one of those like super unseasonably warm days. And actually ended up like running out to the dollar store to like get more candy because like we had so many trick-or-treaters.
Wow.
Which, yeah.
Pretty much everyone, all the kids in my neighborhood go to the rich neighborhood, which is like the neighborhood where they filmed Lady Bird with all the super nice houses. And so that area, like if you just drive through it, it's like a madhouse of kids and teenagers and parents looking annoyed. And it's just crazy. So I feel like all the normal neighborhoods like mine don't really get a lot of action because of that.
So for us, we have a variety of tiers of treats depending on a number of factors. Mm-hmm. The first of which being... like if you're a kid that has an obviously homemade costume, you're going to get like a full size candy bar, like especially like regardless if it's good or shitty or whatever. But you got to have like kind of like the crappier candy for when like the giant packs of kids come.
Yeah.
Because like that seems to be a thing now, is that like one mom will bring like, you know, a bunch of kids and it's like, dude, I'm not giving out 12 candy bars in this one stop.
Here's your Necco wafers. Now get out of here.
Basically, yeah, so that's when like the Costco candy comes into play. And then like later in the evening when you get like the shithead teenagers that are coming around, they get, I go to the banks around me and pick up like brochures on like checking, how to open a checking account and other stuff like that. So they get a brochure of financial interest and a number two pencil.
That's a pretty awesome thing.
I was trying to find like the sample size, like dental floss, you know, like the kind of like travel size, but the smallest ones I could find were the, just the travel size ones we had at Walmart, which are like, you know, like 90 cents each. And that seemed like a lot to screw with some teenagers. So I don't know. But anyway, this podcast is actually sponsored this week again by Armor Games. We actually talked about the game that is sponsoring this podcast last week. It is Crush the Castle Siege Master, which is a 3D reimagining of the original Crush the Castle, which is a really good kind of like Angry Birds sort of thing. Actually, remind me next week to post a review of it if I haven't already. I've been playing that a lot. It's really good. Free on the App Store, so check it out. One other caveat for this particular episode, my Comcast internet has been absolutely atrocious the last few days. Actually coming tomorrow between, I don't know, whatever absurd time window they give you to fix it. So if Jared sounds robot-y or the video kind of sucks, that's why. I apologize in advance. But You know how it is with Comcast. You just kind of deal with it, right?
You're sounding robot-y to me, so if I
well, you
have
sound
to...
good to me, so far so Hopefully. Good. So I don't know, apologies in advance, everyone. Like, usually our podcast is of decent audio quality and things like that, so just so you know. If you like this podcast, you like Touch Arcade, you like our website and all the stuff we do, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade, or do your Amazon shopping at TouchArcade.com/Amazon. Both would be highly appreciated. And with that, we can get on to the podcast, unless there's anything else that is pressing that we need to talk about. You can think of top of the show.
Wow. What are you saying?
Well, I'm not robot-y to you.
Yeah.
Well, did I tell you I got a new Apple Watch?
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, so here's,
so did
why,
I.
Here's why. Like, a friend of mine did the trade-in thing.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, dude, I got like $300 trading
really?
In my Series 3 watch.
Okay.
At which point, like, the upgrade then is like a couple $100.
Right, right.
And I was like, well, damn, like, that's fine. I'll do that.
I wanted to get a new one because I had a Series 0, which was the very first Apple Watch that they didn't even give a series number to. And the trade-in value is $25.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, so that's why I did it, is because, like, as part of that conversation, my buddy was like, oh, yeah, my wife had the old one. And when she went to trade it in, it was, yeah, like, you know, $20 or $30 or like, so, like, not even yeah. worth the trouble. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, well, shit, I might as well strike while the iron's hot here and get like max value out of this dumb watch. Actually, but going from the Series 3 to the Series 4, I'm almost like, this is almost kind of dumb. Like, it's.
Right.
Like, the bigger screen doesn't really make that big of a difference, and it wasn't like the Series 3 was slow.
Right.
So
no, that's what a lot of people are saying, especially with the price drop on the 3. A lot of people are even saying just to upgrade to that if you don't have one already, because it's far cheaper. But going from the original to the 4 has been a huge upgrade for me.
Yeah.
And even just not even the bigger screen and the rounded corner stuff and all that greatness, it's just a better screen, like a way better, easier to read. And it's so much faster doing just anything at all. And so it's been kind of like a really big leap for me.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty happy with it now. But I agree, nothing really takes advantage of the big screen yet. It's kind of like when we got the iPhone 10 and things that aren't full screen are really noticeable. But hopefully over time, like, that'll kind of change and more developers will kind of take advantage of like that extra corner space for complications and stuff, and hopefully Apple themselves kind of revamps their watch face line, because yeah. I feel like it's super lacking.
Well, did you notice that so yeah, that was the first thing I did, was like, all right, like, how can I, like, what watch face can I use to like max out what's displayed on screen? And so
there's
like,
nothing good. Yeah,
well, there's two new ones, but a lot of the complications don't work with those yet, like
yeah.
like, for instance, like, if you use either the two ones that take advantage of the corner space, like, you can't get messages. Like, the message
yeah.
messages complication doesn't exist, which is like,
yeah,
I feel like that's like, at least that's like one of the core things I use my Apple Watch for, is like
right.
seeing messages that I missed from my phone being in the pocket. So I don't know. You probably remember, like, I was really not into like the first generation Apple Watch, and that pushed me off of buying one
right.
until they added cellular stuff. And I was like, well, that seems useful enough to give that a try. And I really liked the Series 3 because it was fast enough to actually like use third party apps and have it not be irritating.
Yeah.
So Series 4 is kind of similar to that. It's honestly, it's aside from the screen size, it's like really not a noticeable difference, which.
And I actually did not get a cellular one.
Oh, really? I really yeah. like that. And I don't know, maybe it's just me being weird, but I like the idea of, you know, being able to like call for help from my phone.
Yeah.
Or from my watch, rather. Like, I don't know. It's.
Yeah.
I used over the last year, I've used a cellular functionality all of about twice.
Right.
And I think
well,
that was both just
know,
to
like,
show people how it worked.
I'm not one of those people that's like, I want to go somewhere, but man, I don't want to carry my phone. It's like with me anyway. So it
yeah.
sort of seems like a dumb thing to spend an extra $100 on. But a lot of people are saying too, it's maybe worth the extra $100 just to get cellular, even if you don't sign up for a plan, because you'll be able to make emergency calls if you really had to.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. So here's a really stupid thing about like going from one cellular Apple Watch to another cellular Apple Watch. Look, if Verizon hits you with a $30 activation fee when you switch. I like that,
so...
almost like when I was like doing the initial setup, like I was almost like, dude, fuck that. I'm putting this thing back in the box. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
that would probably turn me off.
$30 for them to, for like for you to push a button and them to change a number in their database is
that's
ridiculous.
So, lame.
So yeah, wow. I don't know. That would really put me on tilt with the whole setup. But other than that, I don't know. Like, it seems like a very substantial upgrade if you're in Jared's situation, not so much if you're in mine, but I don't know. I don't really feel bad maximizing resale value on my Apple Watch, I guess.
For that trade, I think that's super worth it. You're spending an extra 100 or so bucks or whatever and getting the newer one. That seems good. 300 bucks is really great trade-in value, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess we can get into the news of the week. You just actually held off recording the podcast for this Cosmic Top Secret game that you wanted to post about before we started.
Yeah.
So what's this all about?
This has been kind of making the rounds of like the indie game festivals and stuff for the last several years. And I recognize the name, but never actually looked into what the game was because I sort of just assumed it was like a desktop Steam game or whatever. But as it turns out, it actually is coming to mobile too. And they sent out a PR blast about its release date. And so that got me sort of looking into it. And once I started digging in, it just became this really fascinating story to me. And so basically what it is there's this this woman named, I'll probably butcher her name, but it's Trine Lyer or Trine Lyer. She's like a Danish filmmaker and animator. And as she was growing up, she came to find out that her parents may have actually been in like the Danish Secret Service Agency and might have actually been like Danish spies during the Cold War. And so she decided to film interviews with them over the course of like a few years, trying to find like answers behind this whole thing and find out what the truth was behind her parents being spies potentially or whatever. And so she took all that footage and all that audio interviews and stuff and created a project out of it for her film school project. And it ended up getting the attention of the Danish Film Institute, which gave her money to take all that stuff and turn it into like an interactive adventure game. And so she teamed up with a developer named Klassefilm, which is a Danish developer. And they've been working on this game, which is now, it's called Cosmic Top Secret. And so over the last few years, it's kind of garnered some attention for its really unique look and kind of its unique content, being that it's based on like authentic autobiographical stuff about her life and her parents and interviews with them and all that crazy stuff. But the way it's weaved into the game, the actual game itself, is really, really unique. And you kind of have to watch the trailer to really see what I mean, but it's kind of like an entire paper craft sort of world with these real footage clips and stuff played over the top, and everything's just really surreal and crazy.
Yeah, art style's ridiculous.
Like, yeah, it's super unlike anything that's really been out there before that I can think of, at least. And so, yeah, you kind of play through this game and sort of use her interview footage and stuff like that to kind of come to your own conclusions about whether or not her parents were these crazy Cold War spies.
Cat's going wild.
Cat, shut up. So anyway, it's coming out on November 15th, so I'm really eager to kind of see what it's all about. And especially after, you know, being in development for so many years and stuff, it's kind of neat to see it finally coming out.
Yeah, this seems cool. November 15th, Android, iOS, desktop, super stoked.
I think desktop. The email only mentioned mobile, so it could be that Steam would come later, but I can't imagine why that would be. So.
Yeah, no one does that.
But yeah, definitely watch the trailer because it's super cool.
Yeah. So BlizzCon is a week away. If you are even remotely interested in Blizzard stuff, I highly recommend buying the Blizzard virtual ticket, which gives you access to all the streams. Like, having been to BlizzCon, I would almost say that I was looking to see how much they were. I think they're like $60 or something like that. I don't remember. But the experience, honestly, of watching the stream is arguably better than being there if you care about like the different like esports things and the announcements and the panels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because like just going to those when you're there in person is kind of a hassle because there's just like so much going on. And yeah. So this year they're actually making it easier for virtual ticket people. Like before, you had to like watch the virtual ticket stuff like on your browser and like on Mac Safari. The way I watched it last year was just using the AirPlay mirroring to get on my TV. But this year they actually have a Apple TV app to allow you to stream all the BlizzCon stuff, which is pretty cool. So I don't know. I'm really curious to see what's going to be new and exciting this year at BlizzCon, aside from Hearthstone stuff. Like, we definitely know that Diablo on Switch is going to have a big presence there because it'll come out like basically like the day before or something like that. So maybe there'll be some cool announcements surrounding that. Maybe there'll be some more mobile stuff. Who knows? Blizzard is a hard company to predict. So.
Yeah, and what sucks about this BlizzCon is that there's a lot of like hints and rumors and stuff about like a big Diablo announcement, and there's all this like stage area set off to the side that was for some unknown Diablo stuff or whatever, and so it kind of led the speculation mill to think that there's a new Diablo game going to be announced or some major thing like that. And I feel like you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. Although, I mean, it wouldn't be impossible that they do announce something like that. But they themselves even kind of came out and said, like, hey, don't get your hopes too high.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'm going to guess Diablo for mobile. Put that out there.
Dude, I feel like that's a long time coming and would be a great thing.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's next weekend, though. So keep your. Not this coming weekend, but the weekend after that. So you posted about this, the psychological adventure Veritas from Glitch Games, we've been following for a while. Trailer looks super, super cool.
Yeah.
I don't even really understand what you do in this game beyond it just like looking really cool and I want to play it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't want to call it an escape game, but it's sort of that because you wake up in this weird facility and you're partaking in some weird experiment, and you don't really remember why or remember anything. And so the goal is to kind of roam around and find answers and figure out what the hell's going on and why you're there, and also to try and get out. But it's going to, of course, have tons of twists and turns and stuff like that. And it's from the people that made the Forever Lost games, which are kind of cult hit, horror adventure games or whatever. So yeah, this looks really cool. It was originally supposed to come out this year, and then they've sadly delayed it till early 2019. And so that's kind of why they've released this trailer, which is, as far as I know, the first trailer for the game and the first time we've actually seen it in motion, is to kind of soften that blow of delaying the game. But hopefully by early, I mean actually early, and it won't be, too far off.
Yeah, this is coming to everything though. PC, Steam, itch.io, App Store, Google Play.
Yeah.
If you have a platform, it'll be on it. So next year seems really cool. I mean, Glitch Games, cool guys, cool stuff. So
Yeah.
seems worth being excited for. So I posted this story this morning. If you're looking for a spooky game to play for Halloween, I would check out this game. I don't know. It seems generous to even call it a game, but it's Night Terrors Bloody Mary. So
Yeah.
it's a augmented reality experience sort of thing where you basically summon Bloody Mary on your phone, which seems pretty cool. I mean, like, was the Bloody Mary urban legend a big thing in California when you grew up?
Yeah, it was a big thing, and it used to scare the crap out of me, where you'd go into the bathroom and turn off all the lights or whatever and have a candle and you'd say Bloody Mary in the mirror or whatever. And yeah, it was a freaky, weird thing when I was a really young kid, and my sister and her older friends would have slumber parties and mess with me with stuff like that.
Yeah, I definitely it was similar for me. Like I don't remember what age I was, but there was definitely a time where it was like, this is the scariest thing imaginable, and there's no way that I want anything to do with doing like the Bloody Mary
Yeah.
stuff.
They would always do. Did you ever get the concentration game?
There was a
Like
lot, like,
pound on your back and stuff.
oh yeah.
That
So
freaked me out.
yeah, well, so Night Terrors Bloody Mary is an AR thing with like. Kind of like renders all sorts of stuff, kind of in your game world, I guess, like in your AR, like real world, and the I don't it's just I don't know, like it's not a game, for sure,
Yeah.
but it's a cool horror thing.
Yeah.
I guess. So
appropriate for Halloween time, I guess, if you're going to parties and want a cool party trick.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's one of those things like, oh, hey, check this out. Like, it's in the same kind of, it exists in the same arena as like that It House VR thing they did, like the Stephen King's It,
yeah,
like the movie. They did a pretty cool VR game over the summer, I think, or whenever the movie came out. It was pretty neat, but it was a lot of like jump scares and other crap like that. So, $2. That's a neat little AR toy if you're into it. It's cooler than a lot of AR stuff I've seen, which, you know, is admittedly a fairly low bar, but I don't know. But announced on our forums this morning, the Hello Neighbor prequel, Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek, is coming to iOS. They got a beta test thing going on our forums. If you never played Hello Neighbor, it is a kind of like a stealth horror survival sort of game where it's like you're like sneaking into your creepy neighbor's basement and like trying to figure out like what mysteries are taking place inside of his basement, which like an odd game premise to me, but I thought it was pretty cool. Kind of got like totally flamed on Metacritic. Like it's got an average of like under 50 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so this, the prequel, which I didn't even realize was a thing, is Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek. And that kind of explores the backstory, I guess, of like what made your creepy neighbor into a creepy neighbor, which I don't know, seems neat. Hello Neighbor is one of those games that, and this is true of a lot of Tiny Builds games, it seems like it's on like absolutely everything and has been on sale a bunch of times and, you know, on like different bundles. And it's even on that Xbox Game Pass thing. So if you've got that, you can check the game out as part of that subscription. So I don't know. We're checking out and, you know, they're cool dudes looking for beta testers. So if you like beta testing stuff, check out the upcoming games forum for more details on that. So Skullgirls 2.7 is out. It's got a bunch of Halloween stuff. What other stuff should we care about from the new Skullgirls?
It's mainly there's new Halloween costumes for some of the characters, which if you're the collector type and you want to get every variant of every character, you're going to want to be on the hunt for those. And then it on actual Halloween, there's a 24-hour special event where you can guarantee you'll get one of those Halloween costumes or whatever. So if you're a daily player, you'll probably be playing it anyway. But if you're a maybe once in a while player and you're interested in that, you definitely want to make sure you play on Halloween. And then the other cool thing that they've added with this update is they created sort of a semi-official wiki page for the game. And it's filled out by all the community members who go crazy in depth with all of the min-maxing and all the different tiers of characters and just everything you'd ever need to know about this game. Every little square inch, they have it covered. And so they've created a wiki and kind of filled it out with a lot of stuff there. And then the developers have actually linked to that wiki from within the game. And so from your character select screen or whatever, you can actually hit a button and be taken right to the wiki page for that character and learn all the stuff that you might want to know. And so for a game that's like fighting games in general, just have a lot of crazy depth if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts of things. And this is no different. So if you wanted to kind of go down that path and start learning some more advanced stuff about all the game's mechanics, then those wiki pages, I think, will be a real big help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I'm always surprised by how much traction wikis can get sometimes. Like, I don't know. I'm not a person that's ever like, oh, yeah, let me write these huge wiki articles for, like, individual characters in a video game. Like,
yeah.
But I mean,
you know what's weird is like I don't spend my time like I'm going to look at the wiki for this game I like and learn every little thing about it. But like when I have a weird question and sometimes the only answer is because of a wiki page that someone made, I'm like, bless you people for being so into something that you created like every little bit of information you could ever want about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good on them. So let's see. Dan is finally coming to Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition, which I guess is a thing that people care about. I mean,
He came. Well, when the game launched on Android in like February, I think the game was delayed from Android. It came out on iOS in July of last year. Android people were like, "Where's mine?" And so it finally comes to Android, and then they get an exclusive character, which is Dan, which is like the joke character of the entire series. And so
what
I was
game
kind
did
of
they add
jealous of
him
him.
In? Was it Street Fighter 4? Was it Street Fighter 4
No,
they
he was
added
in
Dan?
Street Fighter Alpha. He was in Street Fighter Alpha originally, and he was a riff on SNK's like King of Fighters series and stuff like that. So it's pretty much Capcom making fun of SNK with their own character, whose fireball goes like 3 inches in front of him, and who all of his attacks are super weak and stuff like that. And so it kind of has become a joke over the years. Like, players will actually, you know, actively pick Dan because he's such a weak, sucky character. And if they can whip your ass with Dan, then that means you're pretty bad. Hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of like he's become sort of a beloved character over the years, I would say, even though he's sort of a joke. And so, yeah, Android folks had him in the game since February, and I was always kind of hoping they'd release him for the iOS version too. And so that's what they did this week. So hooray for Dan.
Yay, Dan. Cool. I don't know. Neat. Yeah, I don't know. That's my take on it. Neat. So Pokemon Go, interesting update this week. It finally hooks into both the Apple Health on iOS and Google Fit on Android, which are basically the same thing, but just, you know, different platforms. So it tracks, you know, your walking distance and stuff for the different, you know, distance based things that you need to do in Pokemon Go, which is, you know, like hatching eggs and other junk like that, upgrading like your whatever they call like the companion Pokemon or whatever, which is pretty cool, because I think like one of the things that led to the burnout of this game for me was when I don't know, it's just like you have to keep the game open in order to like see any progress or do anything, which is
that, like, seemed really dumb.
Yeah, well, it seemed dumb, and like the game burnt a lot of battery and all this stuff, and I'm just like, I don't really care about this that much to be sacrificing like a third of my battery to get some distance-based achievement when I have like various things that can monitor how far I walk that use no battery, like between my Fitbit or I guess Apple Watch or whatever else. So I don't know. That's cool. I guess if you're still playing Pokemon Go, you probably already know about this. If you don't, and that was like a primary annoyance of yours, I guess it's worth checking out again. They're still constantly updating everything. So
yeah,
I don't know. I guess give it a look. always excited for Kingdom Rush stuff. So Kingdom Rush Vengeance is up for pre-order. If you have never played a Kingdom Rush game, I feel like you can make a pretty strong argument that it's one of the better tower defense series on iOS.
I would say, along with the Field Runners, it'd be the best.
So it's like Field Runners is obviously like the open field kind of tower defense style. This is more of a fixed path sort of thing.
Yeah, and it became known for having, like, you can control a character, so it sort of gave like an action based, you know, element to normal tower defense, which in something like Field Runners is set up a bunch of towers and then wait as they kill, you know, incoming enemies or whatever. Yeah. And this one was like, hey, do that, but also run around and bash them yourself.
Also, the way it's structured is like you can't freely place your towers, right? There's just like build points.
Yeah, it was like fixed build points. Yeah,
which I don't know. I always kind of like that, because I feel like I tend to overthink these tower defense games otherwise, and be like, oh, how many towers can I like shove into this corner here, and like which type should they be and stuff. But when you have kind of a limited scope of the decisions you can make, I find myself enjoying it more, because it's like, all right, like this seems logical to put these here, kind of thing.
Yeah, I always kind of enjoyed that better too. Not that I don't love Field Runners, but I would do the same thing where it's like, what's the craziest snake maze I can make out of these towers or whatever? And it's kind of nice to have a little more structure to the whole, you know, thing. But this Kingdom Rush is actually, you get to play the bad guy, which I think is a cool spin. So I don't know. It comes out soon, like next month, I think.
Yeah. So if you've never played a Kingdom Rush game before, the first one's free. Second one's $2, third one's $3, which makes you wonder if this one could be $4.
I don't know, but if you haven't played them, start with the first one, I guess, and just play it, and it's awesome, and you'll like it, and then you'll want this one too.
Yeah, check it out. So the Quest is the game that just like won't stop. If you like kind of like old school first person dungeon crawly kind of stuff, and you're not playing the Quest yet, you're gonna like absolutely lose your life to this game. $8, super premium. I think the $8 always includes all the expansions too, right? Like
no,
they're not. Those not free content.
No. The base game is like $8, and it's like easily 80 to 100 hours worth of story content.
Oh,
to play.
That's right. Yeah, and then
and
like,
then each, there's a million expansions,
and so each expansion adds like just as much gameplay, right?
Well, close to it, but it's the expansions are kind of interesting because you can play them as standalone games if you want, and it'll just auto generate a character for you to be whatever appropriate level is good for that certain expansion. Or you can actually like trigger them from within the base game, and then you don't need to keep the standalone expansion app around anymore. So kind of if you already play the quests and like the expansion stuff, you can kind of keep everything in one app by kind of going into the base game and triggering the different expansions. And then you can go through and play through those expansions whenever you want from the base game, which I think is so awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
This game's just so, if you were like an hours per gameplay for money spent type of person, it doesn't get much better than this.
Yeah, you just have to like be ready to get into a very in-depth game.
It's very in-depth.
Which is, you know, for a certain kind of person, this is like probably the only thing you need on your phone.
Yeah.
For me, I've like tried and failed to play this several times because it's just like they don't waste any time to just like throw you in the deep end of the pool and send you sinking to the bottom.
Well, they don't do anything to prevent you from going somewhere where you're going to get your ass kicked. And if you're not paying close enough attention, it's kind of hard to know what to do or where to go. But once I think you find the rhythm of it, it becomes easy to pick up and play in short bursts, which I think is kind of cool for an RPG.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's beyond my mental capacity. I'm too much of a simpleton to enjoy this kind of game. Well, let's blow through these last stories real quick and get a word in from our sponsor. So Red Dead Redemption 2 is out now. It's got a really cool companion app. If you're playing Red Dead on your Xbox or PS4 and you have an old iPad or I guess even your iPhone, the companion app seems pretty cool. Actually, I haven't fired the game up yet, but I'm really excited for this because it seems like in like Grand Theft Auto games and stuff like that, you're spending like a third of your gameplay time like going into the pause menu to like fiddle around with like, you know, your map and everything else. Whereas this, like, that whole pause menu basically exists on your iPad, iPhone, or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
that's cool.
Like, connects to your console and updates in real time and everything else. I just think, like, it's interesting that we're seeing, like, such a good second screen experience. Because, like, remember, it was, I don't know, like, 5 years ago now, it was, like, everything had some, like, shitty second screen experience.
Yeah.
And then like, I don't know, it just like died off one day. It was just like one day everyone just decided, well, we don't care about that anymore.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's a real shame because like nowadays you have connected consoles and you have connected mobile devices and stuff like that. And a lot of stuff is cloud based and server based. And so you feel like you should be able to connect an app to a game and have like meaningful stuff happen back and forth. So I don't know. I still feel like there's a ways to go where we can, you know, have better experiences with that stuff.
Yeah. But I'm just super stoked for this, like solely for the map alone. I mean, like, I've been playing Forza Horizon 4 on my Xbox and like, that's got a huge map and I'm like always pausing to look at it and stuff. And I just like was thinking, like, man, if I have this map on the iPad, that would be awesome. Like, especially updating real time and everything. Yeah. That's another thing. If you have Xbox Game Pass, you got to play Forza Horizon 4. It is just ridiculously good. So anyway, Red Dead Redemption 2, check that out. Super Faust, I guess how we pronounce this. It's coming out on November 20th. I feel like you talked about this a couple times before.
The original Faust was a really cool game.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It came out last year and it was kind of like sort of a downwell but with like a Flappy Bird mechanic, so you sort of flapped around the screen trying to run into enemies while avoiding fire. And it worked really well. It's kind of like a brief sort of arcadey kind of experience. And so if you played that game and then you look at the trailer for this, you'll understand where it got like its super from, because it's now Super Faust and it's like a full blown like action game with like, you know, more than single screen levels and tons of crazy enemies and boss fights and full color graphics and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like
the original awesome. Faust.
Yeah, I'm glad they kept the mechanics. I thought the flappy mechanic where you run into enemies and stuff, I thought that worked really well. So I'm happy to see that return, but be in a much more fleshed out game.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's coming out November 20th. Looking forward to that. Looks really cool. Just real quick, I don't know how into this people are going to be, but this game, I think you pronounce it Kluest, Kluest. I don't know. This seems pretty neat because it's like a open world, real time kind of like Pokemon Go augmented reality collaborative RPG thing. Which I don't know. Like it's one of those things that like you know when you watch like the little demo video, you're like, oh damn! Like I could see that being like really really cool. But the reality of it is probably going to be like most GPS based games. There'll be like no one playing, and it'll just be super boring. So I don't know. It's
The potential, though.
we're checking out. Yeah. So if you check out their project website, it's probably easier to remember sonsofabit.com are the guys that are making it.
Good name.
It just I don't know. It looks neat, and I wish we were in a reality where something like that would just be a huge success, but
Right.
I don't think we are. And last but not least, if you're following new iPhone stuff, interesting thing came out this week about the Google Pixel 3. So they've got this new thing that they're calling Night Sight. So
This blew my mind.
it like totally blows like so like the problem with mobile devices always is like the camera aperture is only so large. You can only let so much light in. So even the as good as they've gotten over the years, low light photos still really suck.
Right.
And Google is doing some magic with the Pixel 3 that like low light photos look bananas.
Seriously, straight up magic.
I like type into Google like there's a really good comparison article on The Verge, but like everyone's covering this today. Like Pixel space 3 space night space night sight. SIGHT. So just look at the comparison shots. You'd be like, holy shit, like that is a game changer. So we'll see what Apple comes back with because they always tout like how advanced their camera stuff is,
Right.
right?
Well, it's crazy too because they take some of these pictures that are like at night or like at dusk, really, with like street lights and stuff like that. And then the Google version looks like a daylight picture. Like it's freaky.
Yeah, it's really, I have no idea how they're doing this, and it's really cool. And I guess it makes me excited for the next iPhone because Apple's going to need to do this too, because
Yeah.
that's a game changer kind of thing to be able to take
For
like such
sure.
good low light photos. Like, especially if you're able to take photos like this without like a tripod or something, because that's always the
Yeah.
thing. Like, the longer your lens needs to, longer your shutter needs to be open, like the more stable you need to be. And like, I'm just a shaky dude anyway. So, I don't know. But so check that out. Yeah, Pixel 3 by Google. The feature is called Night Sight. So with that, let's get a quick word in from our sponsor. You mentioned at the top of the podcast, Armor Games is sponsoring the show all month, which they make a lot of good stuff. But in particular, this week is sponsored by the new Crush the Castle game, Crush the Castle Siege Master. So here's your ad copy. The projectile lobbing game that started it all is back with more smashing trebuchet action. Load up and let fly with Crush the Castle's Siege Master, a 3D reimagining of the game that stole the hearts of over 100 million players worldwide. Fling smoldering boulders through castles and lay waste to the treasonous factions of your realm. Fighting pigs is for the birds. Let kingdoms fall at your fingertips and Crush the Castle's Siege Master, available now for free on the App Store. So, definitely check this game out. Like, it's legitimately really good.
Yeah,
I like it a
I
lot.
like it a
We
lot.
talked about it last week. I've been playing a bunch of it and really enjoy it. So with that, let's hop into some game chat. I feel like the thing that I'm most excited about and the rest of the internet is most excited about this week is Stardew Valley,
I don't
which
know. I don't play popular games, so
yeah,
I'm not
like,
playing this.
you know what? I'm not gonna say anything about that. So I guess did we talk about this at all last week? Because I feel like I had just gotten the test light, but it was embargoed, so we probably didn't.
I don't think we talked about this.
Okay, so Stardew Valley, if you need to know what it is, like super cliff notes, is it's a like Harvest Moon, but in my opinion way better,
Yeah.
kind of like farming sort of thing, but the depth of the crap you can do in this game is seriously just bananas. Like so at its simplest, you are just kind of like a farmer on a farm. You plant crops and stuff like that. You water those crops, you go back to bed, you do the next thing the next day, and then like each crop has a cycle of, I think a routine, like, what's the shortest one? Like 3 days for like the cheap cabbage or whatever the cheapest one is.
I want to say even shorter than that, but I haven't played in a while, so it could be off.
So you wait a couple days, taking care of your
In-game
plants. Yeah,
days.
in-game days. You come back and harvest those crops and sell them, get some money, buy some more seeds, come back, plant more crops, and you just kind of go from there.
And that sounds like such a dull description, but it's totally not. And I've seen so many people come in and be like, this just looks like Farmville. I'm not interested. And it's like, this couldn't be any further from Farmville, except that there's farming. But it really is super fun to discover, like, get new seeds, get more rare seeds, get, special items to help, your crops grow stronger and be more valuable and stuff like that. And once you get in that loop of, like, growing crops and selling them and earning money, it's like it's so hard to stop playing.
Yeah, no, this game is like it'll get its hooks in you like you just won't believe if you let it. My Switch, I don't even remember how much playtime I have on the Switch, like north of 300 hours, I think. PC version, I think I've got like similar, and now the mobile version is also really good. But the cool thing is like it's not just about farming. So like every day you've got a fixed amount of energy. And you're eventually able to kind of like get more energy in the game through some secret things that you'll eventually discover. So you kind of start your day off and you water your plants and manage your farm and use a bunch of energy. And then typically, depending on how big your farm is, you'll have a bunch of time left over that's like still daylight. At which point you can do a bunch of different things, like get involved with like stuff that's going on with your villagers nearby, where you can like form all sorts of relationships and like do quests for them, and eventually even marry someone that'll come and work on your farm with you. There's like a mine you go down to do a bunch of fighting. Like what other stuff am I missing? There's just like so much crap you can do in this
Fishing,
game.
collecting shells. It's weird because I would describe this game as like Harvest Moon, but with like the heart and charm of Animal Crossing, because there's like it's not just like a farming sandbox. It's not really just about farming. There's actually like characters, like pretty well-developed characters that live in the town, and there's a lot of like storyline stuff that you can do, and there's a lot of really fun like seasonal stuff you can do. Like they have different events throughout the year and stuff, and there's a lot of like secret stuff you can kind of do too. Maybe not so much secret, but stuff you wouldn't quite expect, or you maybe have to do other things before you can enable this other event or whatever. So there's like a lot of stuff to discover, which I thought was always really fun. There's like a really good like feeling of like excitement when you discover new things or whatever, new special events happen.
Yeah, so I would say, so the interesting thing about Stardew Valley is that it has been absolutely power gamed to an extent that would just blow your mind. I mean, like it is ridiculous how exhaustive the different like wiki options are and other things like that for this game. But I would highly recommend that you just like, especially if you never played it before, just like enjoy the game. Like don't like if you get stuck on something, just go do something else. If you're not sure how to do something, just go do something else. And like don't spoil the surprises for you, because there's a lot in this game that like you'll come across like different things. You're like, that seems weird. I wonder what that does.
And if you look it up, yeah,
And
totally.
yeah, and the problem is like a lot of those things, like on your first experience, like if you don't look it up, like you'd be like, oh, that's weird. I wonder where that goes. And you'll just kind of like put it in the back of your head somewhere, and then like come back in the future and be like, oh shit, like I know how you use that now. Like it makes sense. Like, all right, cool. Like I probably need to talk to this person or do this or whatever else. And like the problem is like I've looked up things before that I wish I hadn't, because
Same.
it was like I just needed to know how to like get, some specific fruit that someone was asking for or whatever, and just like accidentally read this like super power gamer guide on like how to get like the best fruits and like how all the fertilizer stuff works. And like it's like damn, like I just like totally blew like all this experimentation and stuff that I could have done. So I don't know, really, really cool game. There's like seriously just an unbelievable amount of stuff to do. There's just like constant goals to work towards. a variety of different ways that you can even play too. Without spoiling too much, there's like the company that your character worked for before you decided to go into farm life is called Jojo Mart. And like as you're playing, like you can decide like, all right, am I gonna like align myself with Jojo Mart, which because they're kind of like the sort of like corporate, like the Walmart basically
Right.
of
Yeah.
Stardew Valley. And there's like positives and negatives for both engaging them or just
Yeah.
like going in alone.
Yeah.
So like that's been a huge sink of time for me personally is being like, all right, well, let me try like doing the opposite of everything I did on my farm. Like I'm not gonna
Yeah.
I'm not gonna emphasize crops. I'm gonna get a lot of livestock. I'm gonna do the Jojo Mart path,
Yeah.
and all the other stuff. So really cool game. The only kind of like I don't know if you call this a downside or I feel like the controls are like it's a game made for the keyboard and mouse. So the controls are about as good as I think they can be,
Yeah.
more or less, which is like so the way it works is you've got a tap to move kind of thing, and then you can also just kind of like hold your finger on the screen and your character will just like walk in that direction. Which is cool and it like works for most things. It's way better on the iPad because like your touch points are actually like the size of your fingertip versus like on the iPhone. I'm like playing on my iPhone 10. Like I was accidentally hitting a lot of stuff on my farm, like chopping down trees I didn't mean to chop down, or like kind of like other stuff like that.
Well, it can be very annoying too, because I've miscued on the Switch too, which that control scheme isn't like super great either, but you do kind of warm up to it eventually. But like I'm so OCD about stuff too, where it's like, okay, I have like 40 places I can plant seeds, so I'm going to go buy exactly 40 of them, and then you accidentally plant one where you didn't want to or something like that, and then you got to be like, oh, that just threw off my whole plan and things like that. So like the miscues can add up to be pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and so that happened a lot to me on this. Well, not like a lot, but like enough that it was annoying on the Switch.
Yeah.
And it's just happens way, 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 way more on the mobile version, which I don't know. Like it's one of those things. Like how worked up do you want to get about that sort of thing?
I think they'll tighten it up too, or do what they can to tighten it up the best it can be, because I think this game's topping the charts right now, and so
Yeah.
that's got to make them pretty happy for a
It
little
would.
indie game.
It honestly like wouldn't surprise me if this game doesn't end up being like if the mobile version doesn't end up to be like the primary
Like
breadwinner of.
Minecraft,
Yeah, I mean, 'cause
like
like there was so my girlfriend Lindsay got really into this game on the Switch and like all her friends were interested in it 'cause she like posts like screenshots of her farm on Facebook and stuff and be like, "Oh, well, that looks really cool. What are you playing?" It's like, "Oh, it's sitting on the Switch." I'm like, "Oh, I don't have a Switch." And now
and
like
probably
all
not gonna get one.
Yeah, and all those people now that it's on mobile are like, "Oh, I can play that game that you have been talking about for months, And I think that's kind of happening to a lot of people. Plus, a lot of people like rebuying because what's interesting is that the save game stuff is universal across both the mobile version and the PC version. And it's a little bit of screwing around, but not too terrible. Like you, and I already posted an article about how to do this, but you basically navigate to wherever on your computer is your Stardew Valley save, plug your iOS device into iTunes and use like the document sharing stuff to transfer the folder over. And then your farm is just there. And if you want to go between iOS devices, you can use the Files app to do it that way, which is pretty cool.
Like a very like a analog
Yeah.
iCloud
Well, so
saves.
the other neat thing about this is that the developers are, they seem very amped up to make this port as good as it can be, which was a delightful surprise because a lot of times, and you're like, I don't mean this to slight any developer that does porting, but like, it seems like a lot of the ports are done on like a contract basis where it's like a one and done kind of thing where it's like, oh, cool, you guys ported the game, all right, sweet, see ya. Whereas, so a lot of times, like when we see big ports, it's like, all right, well, the port is what it is. It's got these problems that are you kind of just got to live with because the developers aren't going to do a whole bunch of shit to like go the extra mile on this game because it just kind of is what it is. And like it's been pretty neat like watching like the individual developers that are working on this post and be like, oh, would you guys like virtual controls? Like, oh, I should check out Wayward Souls for how they work. Yeah, sure, it sounds good. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, damn.
Super
like,
open to all that, yeah.
Yeah, like that was not what I was expecting. And they seem, I mean, they've been ultra, ultra non-committal about adding like the multiplayer stuff and like the iCloud stuff. But it's like, it sounds like it's stuff that they're looking into, mm-hmm. which that's really cool. If this game, you know, ends up getting like the multiplayer junk and iCloud save syncing and all that stuff, like, man, just this would be the version to have then, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Bye bye life.
So I don't know. And like, it has very weird MFI support. It's like, it's kind of like half baked and half in there, but it's not super playable yet. Like you can just kind of like move your character around.
Yeah. I think they'll definitely fix that.
Which is weird. Yeah. So it seems like they'll definitely add that, at which point, like, you know, if you've got an iPad or something, just, you know, pair a MFI controller with it and, you'll be good to go. But yeah, man, like, I don't know. This is one of those games that like, it has been a absolutely effortless recommendation for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
Like particularly when friends of mine ask me like, oh, you know, you play your Switch a lot. Like what Switch game should I get? Like my first question always is, well, have you played Stardew Valley?
Yeah.
Because it's just an outstanding game.
And well, I bought it very hesitantly because I was like, I don't think this is the type of game I would like, but everyone talks so highly of it and not really sure what to expect. And it was like, I was glued to my Switch for every day for months. And just dumped so many hours into it and had the best time ever. And now it's among my favorite games of all time. Like, it's that good.
Well, so the problem, and this problem with air quotes with Stardew Valley, is that, you know, unlike a lot of these farming games or Animal Crossing or other stuff like that, where you kind of like run out of stuff to do on a given day, like in Stardew Valley, like if you are out of energy or, you know, just don't have anything left to do that day, you just go to bed. And your game saves and
start a new day.
You get a new day the next day. And like, it's problematic because like very rarely do you hit like what feels like a natural stopping point.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's like transitioning between seasons is like, all right, well, I'm not going to get started on winter now. Like that's usually,
no, me too.
But I mean, that's like, I don't like 30 plus like days of like gameplay to get to that. And it's like, all right, cool. Well, I'll fiddle with winter tomorrow, I guess.
Right.
But that's the other thing too. Is the cool thing too is like the seasonality of the game. There's a cadence to like the way that you plant all your stuff, and some things, you know, only grow in certain seasons. Some things grow for multiple seasons, and you gotta like kind of like figure out like all the math in your head of like, all right, am I gonna invest heavily in, you know, plant XYZ? Like some plants. Like they take a very long time to harvest, so you need to like save up for like summer to begin and then like buy a ton of those seeds and like plant them all and then water them for like the entirety of summer to get
it's a huge payoff at the end.
A huge payoff. But like if you mess up and like forget to water one and it dies, it's like very annoying. I don't know, like I could talk about how good Stardew Valley is for hours. So just like seriously, I would be absolutely shocked if you paid the $8 for this game and like gave it a fair shake on iOS, particularly if you're playing it on iPad and like just don't like it. Like, I would be very surprised. So check it out. Other game that I played a lot this week is Crescent Moon's Candies and Curses, which I got a review up on the site of this. I think the easiest way to describe it is kind of like Slayin' meets Mario Brothers Classic meets Luigi's Mansion meets kind of like single screen one finger kind of arcade action.
That doesn't sound like an easy way to explain it at all.
I don't know. I was just rattling off words that sounded like they made sense.
Yeah. I think if you watch the trailer, though, it makes sense. You get it. You're like,
yeah. Okay. So like basically what you do is so when you start out, your character has a flashlight for her weapon, and there's four different levels in the first room of the ghost house that you're in. So you just kind of need to like swipe up and down to jump between floors and right or left to send your character like automatically running in that direction. And you basically, much like Slayin' in your sword, you just kind of like bump into ghosts and ghouls and slimes and stuff like that with your flashlight and they die. And there's a fairly elaborate combo system that keeps you going. So, which I mean, it's a lot. Like they crib a lot from Slayin, basically. Like if you really, really
Not a
enjoyed,
bad game to take inspiration
no,
from.
exactly. Like if you really enjoyed Slayin, and you want more Slayin, with a different setting, this game is the way to go. My primary complaint with it is not necessarily unique to Candies and Curses particularly, but it's just like such a bummer how games like this are like so freaking free to play now. Like the first, like your first session basically is like the game tutorial, like walking you through, like, all right, this is one currency of the game. Like these are souls, you use them to upgrade stuff. Oh, this is ectoplasm, you use it to upgrade for your flashlights and your charms and stuff. Here's the charm points that you get because you leveled up, and like, here's the charm that you can get to equip on your thing. And like, if you ever need more of this stuff, you can just buy it from the store. And I don't know, it just kind of bums me out because like, this is like, the core of this game is like such a old school classic pixel art iOS kind of like arcade game. And I don't know, for it to be like so, I don't know, have all this stuff on top of it is just kind of a bummer, I guess. But it's just kind of like the reality of the App Store, I suppose. But I don't know, this stuff's just like, it always is kind of like, it's the same turnoff as, and we've talked about this before, like when you download one of those kind of like Game of War or like gacha style games, and you're like, oh hey, this is really like Dragalia Lost, like Nintendo's new thing is like a really good example of this. Like you get through the tutorial and you're like, oh, it's really cool, and then you see like that free to play menu that shows you know like where your energy is and like you know how much of each currency you have and like the
In your
button,
mailbox.
yeah, the mailbox, the events, and like all this other stuff, and you're just like, God, I just like, I know how all this stuff works, and it just exists like, get its hooks in me and like make me spend money. And
And it's not even that I'm super opposed to that sort of thing, because we've all kind of fallen in love with a certain free-to-play game that we obsess over for months or years at a time. But like, man, I'm just so fatigued from it that I can't even anymore.
no,
Like
that's
I you start it up and you get to a certain point and you're just like, okay, this might be the most fair free-to-play thing in the world and whatever, but like I just can't. And so that's just become like an instant turnoff to me, especially in the face of so many really good premium games coming out, where it's like, well, I already have limited time to game, and I'd kind of just rather spend my time with those and work my way through that backlog rather than get roped into, another sort of like treadmill game.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. And, like, don't get me wrong, like, I appreciate a good game that has like a good like level grind kind of thing, but I don't know, it's just, you know exactly what I'm talking about, where it's just like you hit like the free to play, like here's how the economy of this game is gonna work, and I'm just like, eh, I don't
I
know.
don't have time for this.
But so the good news is this does have a no ads unlock and a coin doubler equivalent and things like that, but they're both $5 a piece, which like, so to like turn this game into a premium game is $10, which just, I don't know, it feels kind
And
of
then you're still sort of dealing with some of the free-to-play stuff,
right. Like
so
that's the
I don't
thing,
know.
like buying those two things like doesn't turn the clock back to make this just like a classically balanced sort of,
I
I don't
have
know.
heard, I've seen people on the forums mention that there's actually like a limited bonus thing that gives you the no ads plus other stuff for like the same price. So I'd say if you bought this game or you downloaded it and you played it and you're like, I like this enough to want to spend money to remove ads or something like that, play through it a little bit more until you get hit with that option, because what some people have done is they've instantly been like, yeah, I like this, no ads. And then like a few games later, get this thing, and it's like, could have been like, hey, for the same price, you would have got no ads plus this, and this. So just a hot tip.
Yeah, that's like a pretty top tier bamboozle, I think, to.
I do too, and I don't think it was intentional, but I feel like if you're going to offer those sort of things, have it be like triggered the second you start the game up, and then be like, boom, 24 hours to get this starter kit or whatever that comes with all this stuff. Don't like hit somebody with it after like their fourth or fifth play session
Either
when they might
that
have
or like,
already bought it.
yeah, either that or like when for the first time when you like try to go to the store and like buy the no ad stuff, like say you play the tutorial and you're like, oh cool, I like this game, seems neat, I like Crescent Moon stuff and everything else, and you like try to buy the no ads, it's like, well hey, wait a second, like if you're gonna buy this instantly, like let me give you all this other stuff.
That's just not a great feeling to make people that already spent money on something feel like they missed out just because they were so eager to spend money.
Yeah. And this guy's all like the ad shenanigans too. Like you can watch an ad to, continue like one continue per game. And then like, once you're done, you can watch another ad to double the amount of souls you collected, which I don't know, you know, like I said, the game itself, the core of this game is really good. And I really like it. And, you know, it's got, you know, gifts too, and daily challenges and login bonuses. And
it's got it all.
Like, seriously, it's like they went right down the checklist of, like, you know, random free-to-play shit to add to your game.
You know what sucks? I can almost guarantee this would be the most highest earning Crescent Moon game.
Probably. I mean, like, that's kind
of... Probably have the most retention and users and most, you know, revenue.
Yeah. It is really good, and I didn't see it featured anywhere on the App Store, which is kind of surprising to me, because, like, usually these kind of, like, portrait mode one-finger games, it seems like Apple really likes featuring them.
Maybe they're waiting more closer to Halloween.
Oh,
to
do, like, yeah. You know what? That wouldn't surprise me if this is part of, like, a big Halloween feature. But, yeah, I really, really, really dig this. We didn't mention the boss fight. So the game is structured kind of like a sort of like Ghosts and Goblins kind of thing, in that, like, there's multiple rooms for you to go through, and you kind of like see the world map of sorts when you're in between them. So you get a counter on the top left side of the screen that tells you, like, how many ghosts you need to kill to summon the boss. And then you go through, they start pretty simple, but get a little bit harder. Boss battle, and then that, like, brings you to the next floor, and you get, like, a kind of like a Downwell style persistent upgrade between floors or rooms or whatever. So just to, I don't know, like, there's a lot to really like about this game. So I don't know, I don't mean to dog on it too hard with the free-to-play stuff, because I am really enjoying myself with it, but
I think we're just so tired of that sort of thing.
That's the problem, is, like, you know, with the amount of games that we play, like, it's real easy to be like, God fucking damn it, are you kidding me? Like, this tutorial again, where it's like, hey, here's how all premium currency works. Check it out.
I know that feeling.
It's just like, ugh, I was kind of over that. So if that doesn't apply to you, you'll probably really like this. So and I'm sure the game will do well, because it's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's got... Because it has all the freemium shenanigans, that means it's going to do well. So here I am watching an ad for Homescapes.
Homescapes, this ad I've seen a billion times in my life.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a game. I like it. It's free. Free to check out. So I don't know why you wouldn't at least give it a go.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, like, Crescent Moon is pretty synonymous with really good shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You want to talk about Tesla versus Lovecraft real quick?
Yes, so this is 10 Ton's latest top-down shooter, and they, of course, are known kind of for their top-down shooters like Neon Chrome and Judge and Time Recoil. And so the premise behind this is kind of silly. It's basically Nikola Tesla, you know, has invented electricity, or all these electric inventions, and he's showing them off. And for whatever reason, H.P. Lovecraft, like, takes issue with it. He thinks it's just unnatural that you can harness electricity the way he has and stuff like that. And so Tesla's kind of like, you know, get this dude out of here, and they throw Lovecraft in jail. And while he's in jail, he starts, you know, hatching this scheme to get back at Tesla by way of his crazy, you know, creature creations that are what he's known for. And so this super absurd premise comes down to Lovecraft sending all of his creatures to take care of Tesla and also steal all of his inventions and stuff like that for nefarious purposes. And then Tesla fighting back by way of crazy, you know, normal types of weaponry, like that are more appropriate to his time of, like, the mid-century, but, you know, a Tommy gun and a revolver and things like that. But then also you get these wacky inventions that he's come up with that are like your special abilities, that are like way cooler things, like a big electric, you know, beam that just wipes out waves of enemies and things like that. So it's kind of like the absurdity really adds a lot to the game, and it doesn't take itself very seriously at all. And it's more of a top-down shooter, kind of like their Crimson Land, in that you're really, it's kind of an arena shooter, and you're really fighting against waves and waves of enemies, and they come at you in swarms. And so when I was playing this, it definitely gave me, like, the warm fuzzies of back in the day playing something like iDracula or Mini Gore or, like, Age of Zombies. It's really in that vein of dual stick shooter. And really the spice of it all is coming across and using those cool gadgets. And you play through a story campaign where you kind of go through and you slowly unlock everything. And then not too far after beginning the game, you actually unlock the Tesla mech, which is kind of like his ultimate sort of weapon. And it's basically this big ass mech that kind of looks like an Ed 209 ripoff from RoboCop. And Tesla, once you collect all the parts of it throughout a level, he hops into this mech, and it's just like this death-bringing machine that's super fun to use. And because the enemies are in such huge swarms, you know, you can take out a ton of them all at once and stuff, and it's just a really satisfying feeling. So beyond all your cool gadgets and your cool weaponry, you have some special abilities too. Like one of your main ones is being able to teleport, and so you can shoot forward a short distance, kind of like that game Mr. Shifty. I don't know if you played
I remember that.
So you can actually dart through fences and stuff like that, and if you're backed up into a corner with a bunch of enemies around or something, you can actually kind of teleport through them to get free. And so everything kind of comes together to be a really challenging and skill-based kind of game, especially if you love dual-stick shooters. It's not as one-tone as something like a Minigore or like an iDracula, where it's like, okay, I've circle-strafed through 40 rounds of enemies and I'm starting to get bored. It's actually level-based, and all the different gadgets and stuff really serve to spice things up. And then to pass each level, you have to actually find like this main spawn point and destroy that too, in addition to killing enough enemies to pass the stage or whatever. And so the randomness of how the power-ups are spread around the levels and the parts for your Tesla mech and stuff like that are fun too, so that you're not tempted to just circle straight backwards the entire time. You're actually actively like, you know, have a waypoint pointing you towards different power-ups and stuff like that. And it's a challenging enough game that you're not going to do well unless you do find and use those power-ups and special items and stuff like that. You can't just like use the basic gun and make your way through the game. You definitely need to like use everything at your disposal. So that makes it really cool in my eyes, and definitely keeps it from feeling, you know, repetitive or boring or anything like that. There was a couple of hiccups that I noted. We have a review up on the site, and they're more of technical things than anything. But part of it is just how they brought the game to touchscreen, and they tried to kind of streamline everything. And so you have your dual sticks, your movement stick on the left and your aiming stick on the right. And they tried to do double duty with allowing you to double tap those sticks to do different things. So you can double tap the left stick to teleport, and you can double tap the right stick to enable your, you know, current power up or whatever. Both of them kind of fall flat because the movement one, I find myself lifting and readjusting where my thumb is pretty often, and it'll sometimes interpret that as a double tap, and so I'll suddenly like teleport when I'm not meaning to, and it can totally screw me up. And then the right stick works reasonably well, but even then at times, anything where you have to take your finger off of the thing you're using to aim, even if it's just for a second to do a quick double tap, can really throw off your concentration and your aiming. And so I found that kind of tricky too. So I feel like just ideally for me, 3D touch would be like the perfect solution for both.
Oh yeah, for
like,
sure. For
3D
sure.
touch on the shooting stick to just enable your power up would be awesome. And then even that on the movement stick for teleporting would just be awesome too. As it is, there's an option to have a separate dedicated button for the teleporting. But the problem with that button is that it doesn't disable the double tapping thing. So you still kind of run into the problem of accidentally triggering it, even when you have the dedicated button for it. And that's something they're actually fixing in an update. And I think they're going to look at some alternate control schemes and stuff like that too. And it also supports MFI. And so if you have MFI, all this stuff, it's kind of moot. It'll just work great, like it does on consoles and PC and stuff. So, but I wouldn't let those things discourage you. Like 10 Tons is known for, you know, frequently updating their games and listening to feedback and adjusting things, and they never really just leave something out there broken. So I wouldn't like, you know, prevent that from you checking it out if you think it looks cool. And it still does play reasonably well, even with a few hiccups here and there. So yeah, I think it's their best dual stick shooter, which is saying a lot because I absolutely love Neon Chrome.
I wonder if like a shake to teleport or shake to use the
that could work, like a quick flick or something like that. That could work. I tend to kind of not love shake to do anything, but
yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to like think of other ways, because I agree, like the double tap is weird.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel right, and it could just be better, and I think they'll make it better. But even as is, you sort of get used to it, and you start to find that you're making less and less mistakes as you kind of warm up to it. But it could just definitely be better.
The game mechanic itself is kind of cool too, like how you can kind of like use fences to slow dudes down, but they'll like eventually beat through the fence.
Yeah, there's a little bit of destructible environment elements and stuff. And the fencing or the gates you can kind of use to keep people back, or you can use them to bunch everyone up and then detonate like a bomb and kill a bunch of people all at once, which is really fun. Oh, and then there's, of course, you earn experience as you play. And so you get these power-ups with each level up, where you get to choose a certain like boost in, you know, health, or boost in your speed or your damage percentage and things like that. So it's sort of almost a Downwell-esque kind of system for upgrading and things like that. But just overall, super fun game, super stylish. I love the visuals, and I love the whole Tesla versus Lovecraft thing. Cracks me up.
Yeah, it's just a really
inventive weaponry and stuff.
Really fun, silly kind of take on all this stuff. I dig it.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I would definitely check this out. It's
really it's cool. Also on sale right now too. I don't know if that's still going on, but it was on discount for pre-order, and they extended that into the release, and so it's $3.99, and its regular price is $8.99. So if you even think you might be interested in it, now might be a good time to grab it for just $4.
Yeah. So check it out. I think that's going to be this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Thank you very much for listening. And again, if you like the podcast, like the website, want to support us, patreon.com/touch arcade or Amazon, or sorry, toucharcade.com/Amazon. Two great ways to do it. With that, I hope everyone has a good weekend and a safe and fun Halloween. And don't get too many tricks, I guess.
Don't eat too many treats either.
Yeah, don't eat too many treats. So with that, we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Thank you very much for listening.